All right. I don't know. I want to say this very gently. It's my opinion. As we went into worship, it seemed to me that it was a very quiet time. Now, I'm not here every Sunday, but it seemed to me this morning that the ethos of worship was a time of reflection. Maybe because, yes, today is September the 11th, but maybe because God is wanting to get across to you this morning that He is there. It's as if this morning we as a corporate body were almost like in a wilderness crying out. And the word that kept coming to me was, we're in a somber time of worship. Now, somber not meaning that that's bad. If you look at the painting that was painted, there are no bright colors. If you look at some of the others, tremendously bright colors. And so I was saying, Lord, what's going on? And said, well, what are you sharing? I said, well, yeah, okay, I understand. Because what I want to share with you, I want to share with you about missions, but I want to share it with you about missions in the context of torment, in the context of losing everything and yet not having lost God's attention. And so it's as if this morning our time of worship prepared for the word. And the word comes from Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5 is a very well-known story. It's the story of the demoniac. Here it's mentioned that it's the Gerasenes region. And I'm going to read from verses 1 through verse 5. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart, broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. You know what happened? Christ goes to him. Christ speaks, and there's deliverance. And at the end of this story, verses 18 and 19, the man wants to go with the Lord. And Jesus says, no. He says, I want you to stay. Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. This man has been tormented for years. And in Spanish, we get our word for storm from that Latin word, torment, tormento, or tormenta. So this man has been tormented. It's as if he's sitting in the midst of a storm. It's a very familiar story. It's a story of a person who loses it all. We know he has family because the Lord says, go back to your family. So we can infer that he has a house. He had a job, he had friends. But circumstances are such, and we don't know what the circumstances are. It says he's chained, he may have committed a crime. Circumstances are such that in the blink of an eye, he loses it all. Here's a man that is out of control and out of hope. It's the story of many people today. It could be your story, or it could be a story of one of your loved ones. We have it all. We have a stable life. Things look good. And then all of a sudden, loss comes. And you find yourself sitting in the midst of a storm. He lost it all, but he did not lose God's attention. He did not lose God's compassion and God's mercy. And that's what I want to get across to you this morning. We can be in a desert crying out, the cavalry is coming. We may have lost it all, but we have not lost God's attention. We have not lost God's mercy. We have not lost God's compassion. Our ministry at this time can be divided into three areas. One is church planting. We started 36 years ago. We've planted 5 churches. That then led to Operation Barnabas. Many of you know what Operation Barnabas is. Weekend retreat that we do for pastors and for Latin American missionaries. Now we are mentoring pastors and we are mentoring missionaries, not just in the Iberian Peninsula, but pretty much now all over the world. That then led to a ministry for third culture kids. That's a child whose parents are from one culture, they're now living in another culture, and they have difficulty knowing how to resolve situations between those cultures. So we started a camp. It's a camp now. It's the only one in the world in Spanish. Our ministry is the only ministry in Spanish at this time that there is towards third culture kids. Not just missionary kids, but now we work with immigrant kids. And again, all over the world. In the church planting ministry, I have seen how evil touches people. Mary's a girl that I met in our third church plant. In a prayer meeting, her friend or her roommate said, "Would you please pray for my roommate? She's tormented. She's 21 years old. She's cut off from her family. She's a girl whose best friend is Johnny Walker, a bottle of whiskey." And so we began to pray for Mary, an alcoholic at 21. Something happened, and she found herself smack dab in the middle of torment. Same as this man. We don't know his name. But we do know one thing, that evil is not a thing. Evil is an entity. And that entity called Lucifer wants to do everything he can to get back at God. Now, if you want to hurt me, you can hit me or you may get hit back. I am known as very volcanic in my reactions. But if you really want to hurt me, touch my daughters. If you really want to hurt me, hurt my baby. If you really want to hurt God, can Lucifer get to him? Nah. He's got one way, though. Us. And so he does everything he can to torment, to destroy, to possess, to influence that which God loves dearly, you and me. And so we have a man here who's walking the night crying out, and we have Mary, who with a bottle is trying to drown the evil that touched her. It's always been interesting to me in verses 1 and 2 that it says that Jesus took the boat, and it seems to indicate that he took the boat and stopped at a cemetery. Now, in Latin America, where I was born and raised, we do not like cemeteries. One of our favorite things is not to go to a cemetery and read, "Oh, look, this man died in such and such. Oh, look how nice it." No, we don't like cemeteries. We stay clear of cemeteries. Jesus steered towards a cemetery. Why? And if you read chapter 4 of Mark, you'll see that he had been preaching to the multitudes. So from the context of the disciples, "We've made it, man. We've got all these people." And then Jesus says, "Get in the boat. We're going to the other side." Why? Do you remember that parable of the lost sheep? Of losing or leaving the 99 to go for the one? That's why. That's why he steers to a cemetery. That's why he leaves the multitude. That's why he leaves the disciples perplexed. And when God calls you many times, he will leave you perplexed because it's, what are you doing? You're calling me from this to that? Go down to the road that goes down to the desert from Jerusalem. But there's revival in Samaria. I told you to go down. He does it because there's one broken, alone, and crying out in the night. He does it because there's one who is so tormented that he creates or cuts himself, bringing bodily harm to himself. When you're touched by evil, you'll do some very strange things. Very strange things. I have a friend in Jackson, Mississippi. Interestingly enough, my mother was born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi. Interesting this morning. My friend has a business. His CFO for 15 years has been embezzling. 3 weeks ago, we were in Jackson and found out that he's $500,000 in the hole. A business that was started by his father. When you're touched by evil, you can do some very strange things. My friend wanted to go and cut her head off. You can do some very strange things. Sarah's a little girl that we met in our Third Culture Kid camp that we do every summer. Monies that you give, we then fold it back. And you know this. Monies that we get, that you give, we then invite missionaries and pastors free to the retreat. We invite 110 missionary kids from all over the world to come free to the camp. Sarah is a little girl whose parents minister in an African country. They're from Brazil. And so Sarah comes to the camp, and her counselor tells me she's not engaging. She does not want to engage. I'm a third culture kid, and so I understand the wall of protection. So the last day, hours before she's going back to Africa, I sit down with Sarah on a big rock in the middle of that campground, and say, Sarah, what's going on? You're not engaging. There's a fire in you. We see the smoke, which is the not engaging, but there's a fire. What's the fire, Sarah? She's tormented. She's a beautiful girl, 16 years old. My face is too round. My legs are too short. My body's too chubby. I'm not pretty. And so I cut myself. And so she's a cutter. Christ is always drawn to those who are tormented. Always. Those who are in distress. Those who are lost. Those who are at wit's end, those who have lost it all, Christ, and that's missions, is drawn to them. So when you get that idea, I need to call so-and-so, you're participating in missions. We are not just missionaries. When God puts something on your heart, you need to go and talk to so-and-so, you are participating in missions. Because what Christ is trying to do, what God the Father is trying to do, he is trying to go to the person and say, you may have lost it all, but you have not lost my attention. You have not lost my grace, my compassion, and my mercy. Because so-and-so has just called. And I can tell you story about story about story of serendipities. Where a person says, if I see this or someone calls me, I will believe. And that happens. Why? Because we worship a God. And if you are in a situation this morning where either you or someone in your family has lost it all, you're sitting in a tormented situation, you're sitting in a storm, you think to yourself, God, why am I going this morning? Because where are you? You have not lost his attention. You have not lost his grace, his compassion, his mercy. The cavalry is coming. The boat is being rowed. He is arriving. Restoration will come. In the context of this man, restoration comes because Jesus leaves a very successful ministry, rows across, steps out and begins to speak. All freedom comes because of the speaking of God. In the case of Mary, it came through a dream. In the case of Sarah, it came through a person who could see through the wall. For Mary, it was a dream. She came up one day and she said, "What do white robes mean?" She would always stay outside of the church building. Our church buildings are in apartment buildings at the bottom. Madrid's a city of 6 million. She would always stay outside. She would never come in. What's her story? Oh, she's been very damaged by the church. So one day she comes walking towards me after the service and comes right up to me and she says, "What do white robes mean?" Here's Mary's story. She loved to help in the church as a teenager, 12, 13, and 14. Catholic context, she would help the priest. One day, her drunken father, in a drunken stupor, walks into the church during a church meeting and yells out, "Mary, come home. What would you do?" You and I would do the same thing as this 13-year-old did. She froze. And so her father, drunk, comes walking up in front of everybody, grabs her by the hair, drags her out of the church. And I've seen a lot of things in 36 years. But this one tops it all. Takes her home, rapes her, and says, "I will make you impure for God." So we have a young lady who is trying to drown out resentment, anger, fear, embarrassment. And she walks up to me with a face on like, "Buddy, I'm going to kill you. What do white robes mean?" And immediately, Revelation 7. Revelation 7 says the following. These are the ones who come out of the great tribulation, washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. That has been mentioned this morning. Therefore, they are before the throne of God, serve him day and night. Remember, she loves serving the Lord. He who sits on the throne will dwell among them. They shall neither hunger nor thirst, for the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them and lead them into living fountains of water. Not a bottle of Jack Daniels. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. She came into a wonderfully liberating relationship with Jesus Christ. Have you been touched by evil? Are you sitting in the midst of a storm? He has not forgotten. You have not lost his grace, his compassion, and his mercy. The cavalry is coming. For Sarah, it was simply on that rock saying, "Sarah, let's ask Jesus, see what Jesus thinks of you." I know a bit about this, and I have the freedom to share it. My oldest daughter, we almost lost her anorexia, so I know a little bit about this, about a young lady being in such torment that she'd be willing to take her life. I also know that if not for a direct word from Jesus. It's very difficult. So Jesus, what do you think about Sarah? And on a rock in the middle of the afternoon, sun beating down, there was a holy moment where the Spirit of God began to tell Sarah what he thought about her. Sarah today is a junior at a university here in the United States. She's experienced the fact that God had not forgotten her, that she had lost it all, but not his grace, compassion, and his mercy. So I want to end this morning giving opportunity for prayer, whether it be here, whether it be in back. But I would ask you, if you are part of the prayer team or the ministry team, to just stand up, come here in the back. And if you are a person this morning who are sitting in a storm, we would like to pray for you. God has not forgotten you. You are not so far away from his grace, his mercy, and his compassion. He is here. His desire is to change the somber into the bright. But I also want to encourage you, if you've been one who have been afraid to answer those calls of the Lord, I can't call that person. They'd think I'm weird. I shouldn't be doing that. I can't do that. One pastor in Jackson, Mississippi, a little gal who went by the church on her way to the reservoir to kill herself. She just went into church. And she says, God, if you're real, I need to see the pastor's underpants. Yep, his underwear. She made it real tough. And my friend sitting on the front, the Lord saying, so-and-so, I want you to pray, and I want you to bend down, touch your head to the ground. Lord, if you do that, they're going to see my underwear. And he struggles, and she waits. Finally, he does it. She sees that she had not lost it all. She had not lost God's attention. She had not lost his mercy and his compassion. So maybe you're the person that should have been bowing down and showing your underwear, and you've been saying, Lord, I can't do that. That's just, you know, that's just not me, Lord. Would you go and ask for prayer? Not for prayer of strike them with a lightning bolt, Lord, but give me another opportunity. I want to participate with you in missions. Lord, give me another opportunity. Don't pass me by because I've said no. So,